This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to America. Welcome to America, everyone. Anyway, this is the damage report. I think still I'm John Arola. I'd like to welcome back to the program and here on Big News Wednesday, Big Chaos Wednesday, Jordan Yule. How's it going, Jordan?
John, it's going great. We've got a kind of a slow news day today. If you need to just kind of.
And not much is happening.
Know, yeah, just some water cooler talk.
Yeah. Also, I'm imagining that in the control room there is an adorable kitten walking on the controls. That's what I choose to interpret it as. Anyway, bit of a news day, blindsided by a couple of things, but exciting things. Good news, probably. And then we'll have some other fun stuff. And by the way, we haven't had Jordan on for a while, so I wanted to make sure that we had content Jordan would be excited for. So we're gonna be talking about some games. We almost fit in Elon Musk wanting to put stuff in your brain, but that's gonna have to wait for next time, I guess. But anyway, a lot that we will be talking about. Very exciting, very fun. So don't go anywhere, everybody. But along the way, if you wouldn't mind hitting the like button and sharing the stream, that would be great so the people know we're live. And with all that said, Jordan Yule, are you ready to do this thing?
Yes, I was born ready, John.
I should have had you on as an infant. Anyway, YouTube didn't exist, I think. Anyway, with that said, let's get into the good news. Take a look at this.
America is at a crossroads, wrestling between two futures. Do we sacrifice the poor, the working poor, and the barely middle class to protect the ultra wealthy? Or do we treat our people as America's greatest asset and ensure everyone has a real chance to live a good life? Families are struggling with higher gas and food prices, stagnant wages, and shrinking benefits, while corporations make record profits. These are unprecedented times. Our leaders can't settle for just enough. They must fight for what we deserve. I'm Nina Turner, and I'm running for Congress because we deserve a voice for change in Washington. A leader who is on the side of the people, not out for the powerful or out for themselves. A leader who understands that healthcare has been denied to millions of Americans for far too long and will fight for Medicare for all. A leader who knows poverty is a policy choice and the minimum wage must be raised to a living wage. Who won't take a dime from special interest PACs or do their bidding. You deserve a leader who is from here, who knows what it's like to grow up and live their life in this community. Who has stood up for reproductive justice and served on the front lines of the fight for criminal justice reform and voting rights, not for days, but for decades. A member of Congress that stands shoulder to shoulder with leaders like Bernie Sanders, unapologetically to fight for working people and speak truth to power. And here's the truth. Greater Cleveland needs a change maker, not someone who just go along to get along. We can put an agenda through Congress that puts working families first, and that's worth fighting for. Something you can feel. Good union jobs, expanded health care, child care, and climate justice. Winning the battle against Republicans and the holdouts in our party will only happen when we put it all on the line for everyday people. An America as good as this promise is worth fighting for. Our children are worth fighting for. Our future is worth fighting for.
So this is obviously a very big week for Nina Turner. Tuesday, damage report. Wednesday, on to the House of Representatives. But anyway, obviously Nina Turner, you know, we love. She's been, you know, great on the show as a correspondent across the network and everything. Jordan, very exciting election news. It's not like there weren't some good primaries already to look forward to, but this now jumps right up there to the most exciting races this cycle.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Nina Turner is somebody who, in her special election last year, went out to a strong start. And I think it's just like there were some fits and starts in the campaign where they just kind of put it on autopilot. And her opponent, Chantel Brown, basically begged for corporate PAC money. And what came in the waning days of that campaign were huge, huge ad buys in support of her, and especially attacking Nina Turner. Some really malicious, if not like completely like fabulous, like lies attacking Nina Turner in the waning days of the campaign, funded by, you know, corporate donors and even like Trump allied Republicans. Yeah. Like this is who Chantel Brown had. That's who she was up against. So I think she sees that and knows, oh, in a real election. And when people are paying attention more, like this is totally up for grabs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we can't forget that. The Intercept had some great reporting. We can show you right there. Yeah, and should be kind of a bad sign when the other party is desperate to get you into office. But Chantel Brown also wanted to get in office, so she was willing to accept that money, you know. And now we get another chance with Nina Turner. So it was a pretty close race. I think it was about 7 points or so. The final count might have been slightly different. And it is almost certainly going to be a close race too. Some of the specifics are going to come down to the redistricting process. The initial map for Ohio was rejected, so we don't know exactly what the bounds of all the districts will look like. But it's going to be exciting. I'm so happy. And she had been. When every time Nina was on the show, people would, you know, send in messages saying that she should run, sometimes for Congress, sometimes for president. And she'd been pretty smiley recently. Perhaps that should have been a signal to the world. But anyway, it is happening. So everyone, it's time to get hyped. And if you want to find out more about her race later on today, Nina Turner will be appearing on The Conversation with Cenk Uygur talking about the campaign. You can watch that, The Conversation, at 2:30 p.m. Pacific time, 5:30 p.m. Eastern time, for all the details and I'm sure information about the campaign, how you can get involved if you want to, donations and all of that. Any other thoughts, Jorbo?
on Deep Dive last year when she was running, we collectively made an ad in support of her. Like the chat, the TYT viewers picked the B-roll, picked the sound bites, picked the background music, picked where they wanted all the clips. They did the edit. We did it together. And what we made was a really spectacular ad. So I think that, along with her grassroots support across the country, shows like the power, like what can happen when you have people working together in the progressive movement. So look, hey, chat, let's do this again. Like this is somebody that we believe in and we admire. Let's do it again.
Do you feel like it might be a little bit irresponsible of you to be on the show right now? Shouldn't you go get started? I mean, I don't think we should be sitting on this.
I was dropping like passive aggressive hints for like weeks. Like, oh man, it'd be so great to go on Damage Report again. So that I'm just going to cherish this moment.
Nope, ready to boot you. Got to do the ad. No, come on. We're supposed to rise up. We're supposed to get hyped. And here you are just chatting with some idiot about the news on the Damage Report.
Well, anyway, the idiot part's right, I guess. But.
And nobody will dispute that. We can do a poll on Twitch if you want. Anyway, very exciting news, everyone. I have a feeling we will probably be talking with Nina Turner more about that race in the near future. But with that said, we have other news. Two stories in this first block because of the breaking news. So let's jump into it right now. During the pandemic, and especially in the past year, more and more Americans have been quitting their jobs, giving rise to this anti-work culture. And another person has jumped on that bandwagon. Stephen Breyer, Supreme Court Justice, is quitting. After only serving on the court for decades, he's packing it in. I guess he just wants to go eat avocado toast and play Fortnite. I don't know. But anyway, that was the big breaking domestic news of the day, is that Stephen Breyer has decided to retire. This is the most successful and positive online campaign of bullying of our time. We got him. We drove him out of the SCOTUS. So Jordan, good news. Two bits of good news in one day.
It is good news. You definitely wanted him. Everyone wanted him to retire before, you know, potentially Democrats even like lose control of the Senate, or, you know, Biden is out of office. So because we'll see what Republicans do, or if it even gets close to another election, we've seen them just refuse to cooperate, to stall it until a Republican takes power. So this is good. Like that, everyone was fearing that he would hang on and then just unfortunately die later on. But this is good. That said, I don't know if this is like as great as everyone is making it out to be. Like,
what do you mean, Jordan?
What's it gonna change? What is it gonna change, Sean? Like this is like we're still gonna get 6-3 decisions.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Like,
but the slightly better three. Yeah. So, well, look. Okay, you are obviously right. There's no pure, undiluted good news. That doesn't exist. They haven't announced GTA 6. Everything is contingent, okay? And in this case, you're right. There might be, it's not like there haven't been any 5-4 decisions. It is possible that there are some areas, maybe criminal justice reform, where Breyer, who would generally could be counted on to vote with the liberals, wasn't necessarily gonna stick with them on all issue areas. Maybe whoever Biden chooses will be better. Although again, on criminal justice, I highly doubt he's gonna pick a strong progressive, but I don't know. You are totally right. Still, getting the spot locked down, assuming we can, is good news. And we do need, this is going to be a decades long game now. It shouldn't have been, but it is, because people didn't prioritize the SCOTUS. And the Democrats bungled their attempt to nominate under Obama. So we now need to play the long game, and this is part of that long game.
Sure. But for all the people who at the beginning of the Biden administration who tried to draw comparisons to FDR, oh, this is the most progressive administration and the most progressive platform since FDR. Now's your moment. Because this is a moment that it's like you can draw clear parallels between FDR and Biden. I mean, FDR threatened to pack the court when he couldn't get key components of the New Deal, his agenda passed. Biden can't get any parts of his agenda passed. Pack the court. Like if you're going to eventually see things challenged in the Supreme Court, whether it's choice, whether it's healthcare, whether it's potentially canceling student debt, there's probably gonna be a legal challenge around that. All these issues that are stalled, all of these things that he's trying to do, even like around immigration or COVID, like vaccine, mandates. It's getting, you know, tripped up in the courts. So threaten to pack the court, and they won't do that. This is his FDR moment. I don't think he'll do it, but if for all the people who wanted to draw comparisons, now is your moment.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And so we will see. It's been like 15 minutes since he announced, so we already have front runners. And so according to Ellie Mistel, who's a friend of the show, the three that he thinks are clear front runners are Ketanji Brown Jackson of the DC Circuit, Leandra Kruger of the California Supreme Court, and Michelle Childs of the South Carolina District Court. So those are three that I've seen that he recommended, but I'm also seeing pop up in some of the early conversations. And obviously, a lot of news outlets had this story ready to go. They weren't waiting like, oh, maybe Stephen Breyer could retire. They expected that he might. He's been on there for 25 years. And it seems pretty clear that Biden will go in the direction of nominating a black woman. He said in 2020 February debate, I'm looking forward to making sure there's a black woman on the Supreme Court. He said, I'll appoint the first black woman to the court. It's required that they have representation now. It's long overdue. So I don't know who it's gonna end up being. And it's possible that list is longer than those three names, but it does look like that's the direction he's gonna go in.
Yeah, and Republicans are going to be even more vicious toward a black woman nominee.
Ben Shapiro will be very reasonable.
And watch them. They've propped this critical race theory thing up into hysteria that's infected the minds of conservatives across the country, despite very few even knowing what it actually is, or that's largely a graduate level and especially a law school level theory. Watch this infect the nomination hearings, because there's a real possibility that their nominee has thought about it, wrote about it, spoke about it, because it is a law school level theory. So like, get ready for critical race theory to be injected into the nomination hearings.
Oh my God, can you imagine what Tucker Carlson's monologue is gonna be like tonight? I don't want to, but there are some very sweaty racists frantically typing out drafts for him right now. That's the same as every day though. But anyway, look, Stephen Breyer's announced he's gonna retire. It was just happened. It just happened, but already let the insanity begin, because Fox News has had to sort of live respond to this. And let me give you a few of their takes. Harris Faulkner, I believe, was either on or came on like very soon after the announcement. And she is their straight news. So why wouldn't she be having a conversation with Kayleigh McEnany, wildly speculating about absolute nonsense? So she said, she thinks that it's possible that Biden is going to remove Kamala Harris as vice president and then place her on the Supreme Court. Harris Faulkner said, I can't be the only person who's seeing this. To which Kayleigh McEnany added, I think it's a theory that could be credible. Understanding what the words credible and theory mean very well. So look, it's not that it's impossible, I guess. But why would he do that? There are plenty of qualified black female judges who have been there for decades. I might not agree with all their politics or whatever, but that's a little bit easier case to make than putting Kamala Harris there, right?
Right. Kamala Harris probably wouldn't even want that. I mean, she's a heartbeat away from the presidency, and just by, a quick glance, she's probably going to be a front runner in 2024 if Biden doesn't run again or going forward. So I don't know if she would necessarily want that. But this feels a lot like, oh, did you know that you don't actually have to be in the House to be speaker? And maybe Trump should be speaker. It feels like one of those types of stories where for them, it's interesting. It gets people mad. It gets their viewers angry. And all those judges you named earlier. I mean, I have not heard of any of them because I don't really follow circuit courts that closely. Court watchers and Supreme Court and judicial reporters would know who they are. But the average American isn't going to know who any of those people are until their nomination hearings. So for Fox, this is just how do we make this story digestible for our mouth breathing audience? It's that woman you hate. Yeah. What if she's going to be the justice? It's you're probably going to throw out Hillary's name too. So,
oh, I think centrist Dems will throw out Hillary's name. Ooh, wouldn't it make Trump mad if they put Hillary on the court? Well, yeah, but also me too. I mean, the only thing I disagree with you on is you said it's how they make it digestible. I think it's how they make it terrifying. Scary probably. Woman you loathe. She might be on the court. Have they considered AOC? Maybe. I think that's a theory that could be credible. Anyway.
Yeah, it sounds
so like that's, it. Yeah, that's what they said. Honestly, look, I don't think that there's anything to that. I don't think it's going to happen. And I think they will eventually move on. Although Tucker Carlson is not going to pass up an opportunity to mispronounce both Kamala and Ketanji in one block. He's going to talk about both of them. But that was not actually the worst thing that they said on Harris Faulkner. So, it should be a foregone conclusion. It's January. He's been President Biden for 1 year, basically one exact year. So we get to talk about who might be on the Supreme Court, but surely someone will be on the Supreme Court. But should that be a foregone conclusion? I mean, after all, remember, Mitch McConnell blocked Obama from putting someone on the court 8 months before the election because it was too close and the American people should be able to weigh in. And then they put Amy Coney Barrett on the court. When they confirmed her, it's an estimate that 65 million people had already voted in that election, which would take place in 8 days. So there can be some hypocrisy. And look at this from Harris Faulkner. I want to get into some of what we've seen. And that is this idea that it is too close to the election to get something like this through for a president. We've seen it among Republicans. We've seen Democrats do it as well. What Supreme Court justice did the Democrats deny to the Republicans? I will remind you, I looked it up. I did research. The next presidential election is in 1,012 days. It is not close, okay? I think we can all agree that that's not what close means.
What do you think? Believe
are we gonna have to worry about this?
I was thinking about that as I was getting ready for this. I was wondering, is this something that they would try to do? I mean, when Hillary was, by all appearances, looking like she was going to win in 2016, you had people in the Senate, Ted Cruz, I remember specifically, and I think Mike Lee also, both pledged to never confirm any judicial nominees, and specifically
ever
the vacancy that Garland had been nominated for under Obama. They were saying, we just won't cooperate for 4 years. We don't care. So they might. We'll see. I mean, they've got a, I don't know if it was closer. Maybe they would make that like a hill to die on. But like, again, it's already 6-3. Like, this is just kind of like running up the score. Would they do it? Probably. Possibly. It's a theory that's credible. I don't know. We'll see.
I think if they could, they would. I think, look, in theory, again, this is the Republicans wanted to carve out on the filibuster for judicial nominations so they could get one of the only things they want, which is justices. So we have that now. But you still need to get all the Democrats to vote, assuming that, like, I believe Ellie Mestall thinks that some of those nominees might get like Collins or Romney, which would simplify the whole thing. But Sinema and Manchin still exist. And yes, Manchin has apparently voted for like every one of the Democrats' judges, basically, even ones the Republicans despise. So that is not an area that traditionally he has bucked his party in. There are many that he has, but not that. But it is entirely possible that Sinema could throw, you know, any number of spanners in the works over this. I don't know that that's going to happen. I hope that it doesn't. But I don't think that we should expect anything to go smoothly in this era.
Totally. I mean, the Senate election is going to be key here, because if they do lose control of the Senate, it's like it's either they get nothing for the next 2 years, or they have to fill it. They have to cooperate with McConnell, and it's going to be none of the judges you named before. It's going to be some probably center
Charlie
right,
Kirk.
Like right. I don't know. Do you want to see like a Supreme Court Justice Tommy Loren? Because that's kind of the road we're heading down.
Yeah, no, they'd pick somebody worse. Final thing I want to let you know. This is just a totally random thing that came up in my like searching. Back in March 2nd, 2013, Danny DeVito tweeted, and this is the entirety of the tweet: "Antonin Scalia, retire, bitch." He didn't retire, but he did go anyway. Love Danny DeVito. And so Breyer is apparently out. We will have to see who we get in place. And we will be looking at those candidates and providing you with all the information we can get about their histories. We're actually going to try to get Ellie Mistel on to talk about some, because he seems pretty familiar with them. With that said, though, we are going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about Russia and Ukraine, as well as Alex Jones pleading the fifth. All that after this. Okay, let's get serious, everyone, as we jump into this video.
We have no intention of putting American forces or NATO forces in Ukraine. But as I said, there are going to be serious economic consequences if he moves.
Okay, so that little quote that you just heard, I believe it was yesterday, from President Joe Biden, was a bit of a roller coaster ride. It starts off good. We're not sending in US troops into Ukraine. Then he says, but you don't want a but after that sort of sentence. But then he ends with, there will be economic sanctions. And in fact, he revealed that he's considered individually sanctioning Vladimir Putin if Russia invades Ukraine, which I could see him doing that. It seems fairly unprecedented. But anyway, look, we're trying to catch up a little bit on the stance of the US government, but also I want to talk a little bit about the conversation more broadly about this conflict, because I feel like there's a lot of like missed signals, a lot of ships passing in the night in terms of this. So let me catch you up on a little bit. So Biden says if Russia invaded Ukraine, it would have, quote, enormous consequences worldwide and would be the largest invasion since World War II. The US, Ukraine, and other Western governments have warned that Russia does appear poised to invade. Ukraine says that Russia has amassed more than 100,000 troops along the border, and the Pentagon recently put 8,500 US troops on heightened alert over the tensions, although in his press conference, Biden was very, very strongly trying to pitch that as this is not an us thing, this is a NATO thing. Russia denies any plans to invade Ukraine. Now, if you look at the evidence, satellite images show ever-growing patches of snow-covered tanks expanding along the frontier, and a stream of Russian TikToks posts record the steady westerly crawl of trains carrying missile launchers, armor, and troops. Despite the buildup, Ukraine's leadership is playing down the Russian threat. They say there's been no change in comparison to Russian forces that have been deployed along the border as early as last spring. They said that Western countries and media outlets are hyping up this threat for their own political purposes. And they say that the move by the US and Britain to pull the families of diplomats out of Ukraine was premature. And that while there is a threat of Russia invading, it does not appear to be imminent. So, Jordan, the hell's going on? What do you think?
It's a mess. And I think you touched on a key element, and a lot of this is Western media hysteria. But I do want to point out that like a lot of this revolves around Putin's objection or perceived objection to any Ukrainian membership in NATO. Now, just, you know, foreign policy experts have pointed out that that is so far down the line, if like maybe even not even possible, because they don't even meet the criteria for membership. So like if that is what this hinges on, it's important for people to take a step back and realize like this isn't really like a threat. You have Ukrainian leaders saying it's nothing to worry about, calm down. And you've even seen more tepid responses from Olaf Scholz in Germany, the new chancellor, and Macron in France. So look to less militaristic leaders in Europe who are more proximate to the issue on their stance than really war hungry United States. I mean, that said, this is, you know, there's a lot of like bad blood from the Cold War. You certainly have hawkish foreign policy writers fanning the flames here. At the end of the day, we're not in as to the extent that we were in the Middle East as much, but you know, military contractors, weapons manufacturers, you know, Lockheed, Raytheon, et cetera, they still need to bring, you know, returns to their shareholders. So this, they're pushing for this. And what we've seen in Congress now has been criticized by more dovish foreign policy and pro diplomacy folks as unhelpful. So you have Congress maneuvering to push all of this money toward Ukraine, which would make them the third largest recipient in aid from the United States. They would get in total around 700 million. They're at a rapid clip pushing this bill through Congress that it would have blanket sanctions on a ton of Russian figures that would make diplomacy harder and funnel a ton of money to Ukraine. And I think it's important that people take a step back and realize, is this something that we necessarily need to get involved in right now? And is this helpful? Because if this makes diplomacy harder, it's a net negative.
Definitely. Yeah, you're right. And look, I definitely agree that there are people, I mean, we literally see it happening right now in the House, that are going to be using this to spend a significant amount of money very, very quickly. That is definitely true. As you point out, they're going to have this vote. Hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars. The only countries you mentioned that Ukraine would become the third, the only countries that receive more would be the $3.3 billion we send to Israel, the $1.3 billion to Egypt. Both of those numbers just seem amazing. I mean, Israel is a rich country with its own defense industry, but we give them $3.3 billion. Anyway, a lot of money does get sent out the door, and that might end up being a drop in the bucket in comparison to what we would domestically begin purchasing with this as the excuse. So I would never underestimate, especially with us pulling out of Afghanistan, you know, and to some extent winding down operations in other countries, the American predisposition to waste a ton of money on military armaments. But that said, I've also seen a lot of like what I consider kind of faux anti-war arguments that Biden desperately wants war with Russia, and all of the Democrats desperately want war with Russia. And maybe I don't watch the channels that they're watching, but I haven't seen that. And that is different than, are we going to send them a bunch of money and are we going to spend a bunch of money ourselves? Saying they desperately want it, who thinks, like, I haven't seen a single thing from Biden that's warmongering in terms of actually producing military conflict with Russia. He could be sending his troops into Ukraine today if he really wanted to, you know, like throw fuel on the fire. So I don't know, that seems like a weird, I'm always on the lookout for grifters, and I understand that some people in the need to like talk about their favorite topic, sometimes they have to like sort of make a straw man to talk against. I just don't see it.
No, it doesn't look like we're on the brink of an actual war. But like I said, like this, they're funneling this aid. There's tons of weaponry and munitions on its way to Ukraine. We saw a headline the other day that was bragging about 90,000 tons, I think, of munitions and weaponry heading to Ukraine. I mean, those are, you know, sales basically for weapons manufacturers. So it helps them drive up revenue. And there's an element of that that I think people identify, but they're conflating it with a full-on war, which doesn't necessarily, you know, follow. It could just be yet another standoff out there. But we've seen kind of that type of thinking relayed through hawkish writers. And most recently in the New York Times last week, there was a story that kind of synthesized the conflict from, you know, how a friend of mine, Derek Davidson, just characterizes like a hack writer and one of the worst hack writers in the New York Times, that was objecting to Putin's sphere of influence around Russia. And that was something that we needed to take. And they were kind of implying that was something the United States needed to take on. Like, look, this is not, that is not our concern. That's, I think, what's really important here. The United States does not need to police influence and imperialism of other countries around the world, because we are one of the chief culprits of that. And that only makes things more complex, more murky, and ultimately more violent. So I don't know if we're necessarily on the brink of war. It could happen later, but this is ultimately about controlling Russia's influence, sphere of influence, as it's called.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't see that. I should have seen that. I'm old enough to remember how the media approached Iraq back in the day, and it was different. It was very, very aggressively pro-war. Some of those people still in media, they might want you to forget that that was their stance back in the day. But anyway, we will continue to watch for this, because obviously, regardless of what happens, it's going to be consequential. That said, let's have a brief bit of unfun. Let's roll this video.
Ukraine has the dirt on Hunter Biden. Ukraine has the dirt on Joe Biden, our president. And this is why we could have many of our troops get killed in this war that Joe Biden wants to have happen.
So Ukraine has the dirt on Hunter Biden. They'll go after the children. And so Biden is going to, what is he being? Is the idea that he's being blackmailed? So he's going to defend Ukraine, which he wouldn't want to do otherwise, because they'll release information about Hunter Biden. And again, she's explicitly saying he wants an actual military conflict with Russia that will kill US troops. I feel like just because she's a congresswoman, she may not know what she's talking about. I'm not sure that she does.
I don't know, man. It's funny, they're just kind of like playing the hits when she obviously doesn't know much about it. But she knows that plays well. So it's like, oh, here's a little red meat for the audience. But like, what else is there? Like, didn't we already see all these lewd pictures of Hunter Biden doing like sexual things with random people and smoking like meth or something? Like, who cares? Who cares? I don't care. Yeah. And I don't know if she actually thinks that. I think she just knows it'll fire up like conspiracy theorists that support her.
Sure.
But the idea that that's ultimately what this is about is such a funny premise. And only a brain as magical and as powerful as Marjorie Taylor Greene's could come up with something like that.
It does indeed take very powerful magic to smooth the surface of a brain to that extent. I think it's just a challenge on the right. It's what can I relate to the news of the day? How ridiculous. I'll just pluck some stupid conspiracy theory and make that what today's news is about. I don't think that's the case. Again, as you pointed out, we already got a bunch of stuff about Hunter Biden. People don't care because Hunter Biden is irrelevant to them. He's not a White House advisor. He's not the head of a massive corporation. I honestly don't know what he's doing. Didn't he start like painting? He's probably selling NFTs somewhere. He doesn't have any effect on my life or the lives of anyone watching this. So I don't think we're gonna enter World War III to protect his sterling reputation.
You know, John, you laugh now, but you won't be laughing when Biden sends the Jewish space lasers to the Ukrainian-Russian border. Like, you just wait and see. Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to get the last laugh here.
There's gonna be like someone in like downtown, I don't know, somewhere in Ukraine or whatever, and like loading up a Hunter Biden dick pic, and then the building is just gonna be incinerated from orbit. I don't think so. I don't. Anyway, okay, here's what we're gonna do. We're gonna take our second break a little bit early. And when we come back, we'll get to the Alex Jones story, but then a little bit more good news. We've got yet another awesome campaign ad to play for you. Okay, with that, we're gonna briefly touch base with this. I got a fun video I wanna show you. That's basically what it comes down to. So let's jump into this now. Alex Jones is apparently one of the latest of the individuals involved in the big election lie in January 6th who has sat down virtually with the January 6th committee and been asked a ton of questions. However, like most of them, he didn't answer any of them. According to him, he invoked the Fifth Amendment almost 100 times, which is way less than some. I think Eric Trump said he did it 500 times. So come on, Alex Jones, you can deny all sorts of things. Anyway. Now, he says he was subpoenaed by the committee to provide testimony and records, partially because he spoke at a January 5th rally in Washington, D.C., and was also in contact with organizers of the rally scheduled for January 6th. He was there on the day of the insurrection. He says, I went there to have a peaceful political rally to put peaceful political pressure on Congress. It's a horrible, historic fiasco, and I wish it never happened. I wanted to answer the questions, but at the same time, it's a good thing I didn't. I'm the type that tries to answer things correctly, even if I don't know all the answers. And they can then kind of claim that's perjury. He's just an honest guy. He's just worried about that trap, Jordan. He doesn't want to get trapped.
That's so funny. Do you remember during his like divorce proceedings, they asked about the name of his kids, and he said he couldn't remember because he had a big bowl, a bowl of chili that was too big before the year.
Remember that.
Like this guy is a nut. And you know, a lot of this is like, I think he's like semi self-aware, and a lot of it is just like a character actor that he can't really differentiate between his real self and his Alex Jones like public performance character. I've heard from folks who have seen him around Austin, like when there's no cameras on him, he's like semi normal. So this is a lot of this is just a bit, but it's like getting too hot now. Like you've seen so many people who were like cheering it on and acting like that, like Kevin Sorbo sequence of tweets, like, oh, this is the new 1776. And then like all of a sudden you just see the heel turn happen. Like they're like, oh boy, this is getting a little too out of hand. I don't support this anymore. So it's like, it's a little too real now for a lot of these people.
That's true. And that's sort of what he's sketching out for himself. And by the way, I take long periods of not paying attention to the goings on of Alex Jones. I don't know for sure how involved he was with it. He doesn't seem as tapped in as people like Bannon and those sorts of ones. I mean, he was there and he's the worst, but that doesn't mean that he was directly involved. Anyway, here is what he had to say. And bear in mind, this is what he told his audience. He says that he denied being aware of substitute host Matthew Bracken's specific suggestion that the Capitol be stormed on a 31st December 2020 episode of his show. So he says he wasn't there. He didn't know that his co-host said we should storm the Capitol. Mr. Jones said he was aware that his co-host Owen Schroyer had been charged with encouraging the crowd in a restricted area of the Capitol grounds and was now facing prosecution. So he says he's not involved with that. Anyway, he then showed footage of him encouraging people to march to the Capitol, but repeatedly told the crowd through a megaphone to be peaceful and occupy DC while chants of USA went out. He specifically asked those in earshot to not confront the police. So that's good. I mean, it could be worse. Maybe he has a point. Is it possible that despite not being innocent in any other area of his life, he's actually innocent in this case?
I don't know. He fanned the flames for how long? Like he had, you know, he pushed some of these in like insane theories for years that made, you know, that kind of made this movement and this cadre of conservatives in this country as unhinged as they are. So maybe on some of the specifics in this actual case, he might not be as culpable as others, like including his co-host. But like the thing is, he's like hanging on for dear life because he just got like just totally blindsided by the Sandy Hook decisions. Like he's losing a lot there. he's on the hook for a ton of money. So while they still have that like online store that apparently is super lucrative for them.
Yeah,
it is. You know, there's a lot in jeopardy for his whole enterprise. So I think he's really, really trying to cover his butt.
Yeah, probably a good idea. I mean, you don't want to, like, he's already been demonetized in so many areas. If he loses that shop and can't sell like Gorilla Paste or whatever, then he might be totally out. And think about the hit to his fans. They won't be able to activate their alpha particles in their brain anymore. So that would be sad. Anyway, Jordan, earlier you were talking about the distinct turn that you noticed among some people like Kevin Sorbo on January 6th. They were all like Josh Hawley at first, but then, oh no, eventually as they realized that what they had clearly been advocating for was actually happening, and more importantly, was happening but not working and not being received well. If they had just swept in and actually made Trump president, I don't think the heel turn would have happened. But anyway, I want to give credit to Media Matters for an amazing mashup of commentary that was made by two individuals, Sebastian Gorka and Joe DiGenova, on January 6th, when it was happening, the insurrection, and 1 year later, approximately. So here is slight differences in how they portrayed the event.
Protesters, those patriots, have taken over Capitol Hill. As we saw a protester just moments ago on television say, "That's our house." It's not the senators. It's not Nancy Pelosi's. It's not Chuck Schumer's.
What is happening is in the finest tradition of American revolutionary thought. This is the beginning of the continuation of the Trump movement.
Gray Epps was working for a third party, probably somebody who used to work in Congress on the Intelligence Committee, and then reported to the FBI through that third party. On your show, on January 6th, 2021, and yes, there we sat, and as soon as we saw what was happening, I said, this is a catastrophic security failure. And what that meant was the Speaker of the House and the House Sergeant at Arms had failed to take steps to defend the Capitol, and they did so purposely.
I'm not sure he's being totally honest there, Jordan. You're like Joe's telling a little white lie.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting like way too real for these people. They, you know, we saw in real time as they watched it happen. I was doing deep dive when it was happening and didn't really know what to say. It was just one of the most that I had just started, and it was very, very confusing to watch. But they're like cheering it on. They've taken the Capitol. What he means is the footage that we saw very early when they took the Capitol was they smashed the windows to get in, broke down barricades. Mm-hmm. Like they were cheering that on and drawing comparisons to the Revolutionary War, the revolutionary moments in this country. That's what they were trying to liken it to. And now all of a sudden, when things are getting a little too real, people are being charged with crimes and accused of sedition. All of a sudden, it's, well, the FBI did this. So So they're trying to rewrite history because they really don't want to be associated with this now, in retrospect, a really violent day in America.
Yeah, it's interesting to see those obviously who at least conceivably could face some sort of legal consequences, how they're trying to rewrite what they did. Others who I don't think would ever be charged in anything, but were clearly wrong and were clearly encouraging violence as it was happening. But then the third, maybe the most interesting group is those who are sticking with it. Like these are just media chuckleheads and they're worried about how it's being perceived. But people like Gates and Green and others, they're not changing their tune. They still think it was awesome. They might eventually throw out something about a FBI or whatever, because Tucker Carlson has told conservatives that's what happened, so they all believe it. But they also believe that what the FBI told those people to do was awesome, and they're glad they did it. So we'll see. I don't think consequences are ever coming for them anyway, only for regular conservatives. But great work by Media Matters in putting that together. Anyway, with that said, we are running low on time in this final hour. So why don't we jump into a little bit more primary drums with this video.
A principled leader wouldn't accept huge donations from the shadiest lobbyists out there. An honest candidate doesn't have a history of suspicious campaign reporting. A trustworthy politician doesn't face discrimination lawsuits from their employees. Henry Cuellar's done it all. Now the FBI is raiding his home and campaign office. Whatever Cuellar is hiding, Texans are already sick of corrupt politicians in D.C. It's time for a change. Democrat Jessica Cisneros for Congress.
So you're seeing there an ad by the Justice Democrats, obviously capitalizing on what's going on with Henry Cuellar, much of which we don't necessarily understand, but none of it looks good. And while Cuellar has come out and spoken, and we'll show you some video in a little bit, what does not appear to be the case is that this is separate from him, this investigation. It has nothing to do with him. He's not even claiming it has nothing to do with him. He's claiming he hasn't committed any crimes or anything like that, but this is not like an associate of his being investigated, so they needed to grab a laptop or anything like that. So it was already going to be a very tight primary. Jessica Cisneros is a great candidate, and now it's looking like it might be even more competitive. She might have a real shot at this thing.
Yes, John, this is a race that we talked about yesterday on Deep Dive for about an hour, and this is the district in Texas that I've probably been like following the closest for a few years now, because she ran in 2020 and she really, really had a good chance and only lost by a couple thousand votes. Cuellar is like, he's been a mainstay in Texas 28 for over a decade. He has a ton of connections in DC. And in the waning days of that race, Pelosi flew down there to campaign for him and fundraise for him to help him get over the finish line. So, and then what did he do? This is after he voted with Trump for the 69% of the time in Trump's first 2 years. And now the day he gets raided by the FBI, Steny Hoyer publicly endorses him. This is a guy who is now inviting a shadowy dark money group to inject tons of money into his race. This is somebody who we just saw in the Intercept's reporting has close ties to one of the worst anti-choice groups in Texas. You saw in the ad, he fired someone for being pregnant. Like, these are reprehensible characteristics in anyone, let alone a member of Congress. And this is not somebody you would think the Democrats want in their ranks. So this Azerbaijan investigation, it looks like he might just be advocating for their oil interests in Congress. The Intercept has a really good piece on that by Ryan Grimm and Lee Fang. I would encourage people to read it. But this is a moment where progressives can expand their squad, expand Justice Democrats' representation in Congress. If you focus on Texas 28, you can get Jessica Cisneros in there and get this guy out of there. The primary is March 1st. Early voting starts soon. This is totally, totally winnable.
Yeah. I really hope so. She's awesome. Someone was asking in the chat, wasn't she on TYT recently? Yes, I believe she was on The Conversation. I also spoke with her on the Damage Report just a couple of weeks ago. That interview is available. And yeah, I hope that, as you sketched out, a line can be drawn that we don't want congressmen advocating for Azerbaijani oil interests. We will not allow it. What we will allow is coal baron senators advocating for coal and being willing to kill legislation to protect that. That's all fine and legal, everybody. But not this thing with Azerbaijan. Anyway, I want to very briefly play for you a little bit of video from Cuellar, who is going to be running. He's still going to try to do this thing. His attention might be a little bit split, understandably, but here's a bit of what he had to say.
Nothing can distract me from being laser focused on getting the job done for you and for South Texas the way I always have. Let me be clear, I'm running for re-election and I intend to win. I will continue to represent the Congressional District of Texas like I always have. It is the honor of my life to represent you in Congress, and together we will win this election. Thank you and God bless you.
He doesn't live in that house. It's just so fake. I'm just so sick of fake politics. I'm specifically sick of fake Texas politicians, actually. But anyway, thank God we have her as a candidate running. As you pointed out, Nancy Pelosi's support for him is so disgusting. Steny Hoyer, was it intentional? Did he not know? Like, at that's so embarrassing, deeply embarrassing. But the establishment just does not. It's not about Henry Cuellar. It's not that they love him. They do not want someone like Jessica Cisneros. They have had enough of the squad and affiliated people. They don't want it growing at all because they know how important every single one of those voices is for demonstrating to people in different parts of the country that having someone who is actually representative matters, who has lived a life that is similar in important respects to yours and believes that your life could be improved through government action. And she is one of many people who could potentially do that. And so I don't doubt that Nancy Pelosi will show up, you know, up until he's convicted at the very least. And more money will flow in, as Ida Chavez of The Nation wrote back during the last primary. The American Petroleum Institute gave over $1 million to the American Workers for Progress Fund, and hundreds of thousands of dollars went to Cuellar. Exciting fun times. Anyway, we got a lot more to get to. Short break, but don't go anywhere. We'll be back with Jordan after this.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.